The Survivor Specialist Phil and Will are back, and today we're recapping episode number 10 of Survivor Season 50. We got Mr. Beast finally making an appearance, but, you know, Will, I got to start with the most important thing, and that's Michelle Fitzgerald getting just nonstop love in this episode. Did you hear all that? That was insane. My eardrums. Aubrey doesn't win the season now. I don't know why. I mean, everything she said tonight, I was like, there we go, Aubrey. That's the growth. That's the trauma. Here we go. Michelle Fitzgerald getting a lot of credit, which brought me great joy in this episode. I had to start with that in 30 seconds. I know nobody cares about that, but I had to start there. Will, you gave a little fist pump. Where are we at right now?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I would have was surprised by that, Phil. Like, immediately when that happened, I'm like, okay, we've got the auction, we've got Mr. Beast, we've got this coin flip, like, we've got all these things to talk about. And I was just like, oh God, Phil is going to start this talking about Michelle. Like, that was just my first thought.
Finally. I mean, it finally happened. We finally got a Survivor. Look, it's like a lot of people will say, well, this was Aubrey giving Michelle credit. It's like this was Survivor giving Michelle credit, I feel like, for the first time. I feel like for the first time, we actually saw Michelle being considered. She, like, we got explained why she won her season, which was she made the moves at the right time. And there you go. I was pumped about this. But look, well, Will, you had your pick one go in this episode as well. So I feel like we kind of have to talk about both of these things equally to start off the episode.
You mean the auction and Michelle showing up, or the auction and the coin flip and Mr. Beast?
Dude, I don't care about Mr. Beast or the coin flip. We're talking about the auction and we're talking about Michelle. The Mr. Beast and the coin flip are going to be late. That's not even important to this episode. These other two things are way more important, no?
I'm down to start with the auction. Like, if we want to delay our coin, because I think one kind of leads into the other and we can build towards it. And I know we often don't go chronologically on our recaps and we start with the vote or the boot or the coin flip in this case. But I'm fine diving into the auction and starting there if that works for you.
I think you're right. I think because the auction actually does lead to what ultimately ended up happening with Mr. Beast, and we'll dive into why Devins ultimately deserved to do or ultimately chose to do what he did and what we think about the twist overall and all of that. But I do think we have to start with the auction, because the way that this auction was presented was it was an old school auction, $500. Everybody had the same amount of money. And Jeff told them right off the bat, there is no risk of losing your vote. This is going to be an auction. And we saw people actually bidding on items instead of just, oh, here's, I have $700, so I'm going to go first. I have $500, I'm going to go second. We actually had an auction. And then it all ended with them buying loved one letters just so Jeff could bring out Mr. Beast. Will, I could tell you wanted to jump in already, but I just wanted to explain the concept of an auction because it seems Survivor remembers what it is. But go ahead.
Well, it's like it was an old school auction, but they couldn't let it slide. They couldn't revert back to what they know has worked season after season after season of the fans' favorite segment. Just being like, look, no lost votes, no advantages. Just let's have an auction for fun, get to know the characters, have a lighthearted segment of the show that everyone seems to enjoy. It was still like this weirdly branded thing. It was like cozy or comfort or chaos. And it's like, since when does every element of Survivor need a name? Like, this is such a new era thing to do where we can't just do something. We have to call it something. Like, we have to call it the Blood Moon or the Double Duo or like Earn the Merge or Merge. It's like whatever we keep calling these things. But like, I don't know, like what you go back to Guatemala when they did like the quasi auction with when it was like, okay, vote for the person who smells the worst. And then they vote for the person. It's Judd. And it's like, all right, well, here's a shower. So you just earned a shower. Or like, who needs nutrition? And they get like a meal or an apple, or and then we lead to a journey or swap or something. But like, what was the name of that, Phil? I'm forgetting. What was that called? What'd they call that?
Oh, it's a tribe swap.
No. There wasn't a name for it. Like, we didn't have to call it anything. Remember in Gabon when they ranked each other before the tribe swap and then drop? What was that called?
Ranking.
It wasn't called anything. What they called the spaghetti thing in Heroes, Healers, Hustlers when they had to go in and eat spaghetti and leave enough? What was that? It wasn't called anything. So we were, again, I'm happy we got a normal auction, that we didn't have lost votes. Yeah. We didn't have running around the jungle for money. Like, I think that is a big win too. That's a waste of time. I'm not complaining. It was so funny to me that even like, it's like Jeff can't let it, like, we can't just return to the good thing that worked. We had to say, all right, but what's the four? Okay. Everything's going to have either comfort or chaos. And then the first thing happens and then it doesn't have any chaos. And then the next thing happens. Yeah. Like, I was the way he had to explain everything at the start made me more confused, because I thought there was going to be comfort or chaos every single item, which is what he literally said verbatim. Like when Emily gets that milkshake, he introduces it as a milkshake. It doesn't say what flavor it is. I thought she was going to go up, take a sip of milkshake, and it was going to be like a bug milkshake. It's like, oh, it's a milkshake, comfort, but there's bugs in it, chaos. Like, I thought that's where we were going. Look, I'm so stoked the auction's back, but it was just such a, like, a perfect example of what's kind of gone wrong with New Era Survivor, that we just need to, like, corn up and brand and call these funny names. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just, oh, why can't we just say have a normal auction? Like, was that so hard?
It was funny. Here's Amble with our AMB920 with a super chat. Have they fixed the auction from Jeff's intro? Everyone started with the same amount, no lost votes, and keep the money you don't spend. Hell yeah. Like, we're back to what the auction was, which was awesome. And Will starting off picking his 1-1, which is almost the same thing. And he's finding the negative in it. But I did think it was funny, and I have to give credit for the editors leaving in the player reactions and for Jeff and production being okay with it, because the players had no idea what the hell Jeff was talking about. They were so confused by this chaos versus cozy thing. And I love that they left it in, because that showed some awareness.
Yeah. We just do the thing. And if one item needs to be shared or split, explain it when you get to it. We were just so confused going in. That he could have easily just said, we're going back to the old school auction. Everyone would have got it. Explain your special rules when your special items come up. Like, we didn't need this. Like, again, we're happy though. We're happy the auction's
back.
We're happy.
We're six minutes in. Will's complaining. No, we're supposed to be happy. This is fun.
Yeah.
St. Cliffo. Let's street Cliffo. Yeah. L Will right now. TBH. Just saying.
Whatever. I don't care. If you think the chaos versus comfort versus this, like, I thought that was really kooky. So, part of me, as someone who loves the auction a lot, drafted it 1-1 as the number one Survivorism thing of Survivor. To me, it's my favorite segment of the show. Like, I'm not going to sit here and have these comments just saying, old auction's back. This is the old auction. This wasn't the old auction. And it's not like we're fully back. Okay. Mm-hmm. We didn't go all the way back. This wasn't a normal auction. We still had this weird branding to it that didn't ever make sense. So I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah. Okay. But we got to focus on the positive, Will. First of all, I want to talk about the fact that Jonathan eating a slug so that Ozzy could eat what he wanted was great. That was fun. I really enjoyed Aubrey being a psycho. I like that we went back to that. So I thought that the chaos part worked when they did it, but I agree with you. They didn't need to announce it ahead of time. They could have just done it. And we'll get into more of the auction stuff and what we liked about it and everything. But we do have to talk about this whole chaos and cozy thing was built up so that we could get this love letters, Mr. Beast moment at the end of the episode or at the end of the auction. And it ultimately leads to, if everybody bids on this, then there's going to be something bad afterwards. And I was laughing and I was putting in our group text earlier, you need somebody like Blake out there who's like, I really don't want to hear from anybody in my family, so I refuse to bid the $20, because then we don't have Mr. Beast on the season. Or Jeff's like, no, I'm going to come over there and rip the $20 out of your hand.
That was my text to the group chat. I was just like, imagine if just no one should. Imagine if someone's like, nah, let's not do this.
What if you had spent all your money? What if you had spent everything?
That's a good point, too. Like, if someone said $500 and they eat their chocolate cake, what, Mr. Beast just isn't going to show up? He flew all the way out there? Like,
yeah.
That's a part of this that I also did. Like, I've said all season with some of the twists, at least, that, like, it felt like they let the twist play out. Something like Sari, I feel like if she didn't want to go back and cast a vote and piss people off, or maybe she couldn't find the coconut in time. With Christian, I think there's a very much a world in which he does solve that in time. And it wasn't like it could have been a win, it could have been a loss. This was not one of those times. This was not there's no part of me that's like, maybe Mr. Beast was going to make an appearance. Maybe he wasn't. Like, he absolutely was.
Well, and like Captain Obvious, someone could lend you 20 according to Jeff's rules. You could share money.
Perfect for Captain Obvious. There we go. So that's why they added that rule back in.
That pretty much, so that we could have this moment happen. So we get this moment. And it leads to Mr. Beast, and they have this super beware advantage. And we don't find out what this is until tribal. And we're going to get into everything that happened in this episode. Don't worry. But I'm kind of speeding through real quick just to get to the twist. And so we have this whole buildup, and we have all this chaos and all of this fun that's going on of who's going to vote for who, and the vote's now on Ozzy, and then Joe, who we're going to get into Joe's gameplay. I'm sure Will has plenty of positive things to say. We go And Joe tells Ozzy and tells Ciri and tells everybody, like, this is what's going to happen. And then it flips on the Steph. And then it looks like it might be Rizzo. And now it's no longer Devins. And now it's going to be Steph again. And I'm sitting there
Mr. Beast going, caused, Phil.
Dude, I'm sitting here going, Mr. Beast's twist is about to ruin a great free tribal council.
I'm sitting there going, look what Mr. Beast caused. It was him being on the island. And then this twist that they don't know about yet, by the way. But him being there in the unknown, that is what is going to lead to the greatest built to tribal and the greatest tribal council that Jeff's ever seen. That was all Mr. Beast. It wasn't the players playing Survivor. No, no, no. That was Mr. Beast, Phil. I don't know what you're thinking.
So here comes Will. For anybody who can't tell, because you can't see Will, he's being sarcastic. I'm just making sure that that's understood, just in case.
No, that was Mr. Beast is doing.
We're going to get comments in here being like, Will's an idiot. Will's stupid. Will doesn't know anything. Oh,
we get that anyway. Don't worry.
Yeah, we do. We do get plenty of that. But so anyway, so we get this build up and I'm sitting here and I'm going, oh my God, this is about to be a nightmare. We are about to have a Mr. Beast twist that throws everything off, that ruins this great buildup. And instead, what we get is Mr. Beast coming in and saying, flip this coin. If it lands on what you call, the prize money gets doubled. You are safe tonight and you get an idol. And if you're wrong, you're out of the game and the prize money stays the same. And so Rick Devins immediately says, I think I'm done. Instead of a 1-in-6 shot, I'm going to take a 1-in-2 shot. And I'm also going to have the opportunity to be safe tonight and get an idol. And he jumps up and says this, and I, like, what do you think about, did that save the twist? Like, was this twist good? Because a lot of people in the chat are really into the twist. It feels like some hate it, but there's others who really like it. And it seems like universally it's kind of been positive, but was it actually a good twist, or did Devin save it by being so willing to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how we're feeling about the twist if someone doesn't volunteer. If you're randomly drawing rocks and then you flip a coin and you go home and it doesn't land on whatever they predict, I think we're having a different energy in the chat. We're having a different conversation. It's not as bad as some other things we've seen on the show. Like, I think Do or Die is far worse than this twist. The Hourglass is probably far worse. Obviously, Blood Moon's worse. But I don't really love it. I don't think... And I'm going to start off by saying this. I love this episode. I was so entertained. Great and episode. I think asking me, Will, did you enjoy this episode? Did you have a great time? Like, I can answer that yes. And then can I say, like, I don't really like this twist, or I think we're not really playing Survivor anymore? I can also say yes, and both can be true at the same time. Like, if you go to a horror movie and you're like, Will, were you scared? Good jump scares, good suspense? I go, no, but actually the jokes were really funny and I was entertained the whole time. But it wasn't a horror movie. It's not why I went to go watch it. Like, that's kind of where I'm at with season 50, and especially, like, this version of the episode. Loved every minute of it. Thoroughly entertained. I know these people. I know the characters. This is, we're not even on the Survivor format. Like, the point of Survivor is to vote people off one by one. People getting eliminated without ever getting votes or casting a vote. Like, to me, that's when we're kind of crossing a line. Did we get the best outcome? And we try not to be results-based. We really do. This was the best result we could have had. Someone on the bottom saying, I'm going to go up and do it. We don't go to rocks for it. We don't reach into a bag, you know, because then we're putting randomness and then we're doing randomness again. The fact that we had Devin step up and the fact that that coin flip worked, I want to hope it's not rigged. Just cinema. Cinema tonight. I had a lot of fun. This is never something I want to see again. This is not something I want to be a part of the Survivor format moving forward. So I enjoyed every part of it. I think it's pretty much not a good twist. It's not Survivor.
That's kind of how I feel too. I feel like Devin's being so willing created perfect TV. Perfect TV. I mean, this was an amazing moment. It really was. Now, there's people in the chat who are saying, do you think it was a real flip? And part of me was wondering the same thing, because the editing was really weird and there was like no reaction from most of the people. It felt like an edited reaction. Also, it felt like Mr. Beast was like pantomiming half of this episode, which was weird. I was like, why isn't he talking? Why isn't he saying anything? Yeah, he just kept doing like points and like weird. And I was
you check out my shirt.
Oh, you're wearing the shirt. See, I just thought it was weird and I didn't really understand that. And it felt like the reaction was very strange. I'm not saying the coin flip was rigged. I doubt that they're going to rig that in front of everybody, but I just feel like for me watching it, the way it was edited, like with the roll and stuff, and then like Devin's barely even reacted. I was like, wait, what is going on? It felt like, I don't know. I remember when Deshaun in season 41, which isn't Survivor, it's a different show, and I will say that forever. When Deshaun goes up and does Do or Die and doesn't end up losing, he goes nuts. And the jury goes, like the crowd goes nuts. Everybody who's there, I'm going to call them the crowd, they all go nuts. And it was like, and this is kind of like DXJC. And I know that this is going to be a conversation people are going to have, so I'm addressing it. Their responses were also tepid, like it was rigged and they were told how to act. And I do feel like people were very confused. The audience is going to question this, Will. And so I need to sit here and I need to have you say something.
Yeah, I mean, I think my first instinct is like, and I could be wrong on this, I think in 41 and 42, and I believe with, was it Michelle and Winners at War when we had the coin flip idol, I believe they were flipping it onto a table that's like waist height or somewhere around waist height where you flip it, it lands, and you look at it and you can immediately see the result.
I think they were even catching it and doing the thing.
No, that's a, I don't think you let someone catch it. I think it was flipping onto it. Like Michelle's, I think she literally went like, here's my phone, I'm just going to go. Just turned it over onto the table and it was like, womp, womp. There was no like landing surface for this coin. And so they tossed it onto the ground on an uneven surface. It rolled away. You have a lot of lighting crossed there. You have real fire. Like no one is able to immediately look at the coin and react. That is why you did not get a like, all at once, woohoo! They don't have like a, it's not like at the Super Bowl or any sporting event where they're like zooming in on the coin and you clearly see its heads or tails. Like Jeff didn't know, he had to go walk up there and find it. So like that would be my first thought. If you're basing it off on like, there's not one unanimous reaction at all at once, how is everyone supposed to see the face of the coin at once? It seemed like
I didn't even Devin's reacted that hard, though. That was the other thing that confused me. I feel like Devin's didn't even know what it was. I know Devin's wears glasses, and like you're saying with the lighting and stuff, maybe he really couldn't see, but I feel like Devin's reaction was
so dumb. I don't think anyone knew until Jeff walked over to it.
Yeah.
So that would be one thing. The other part of it, like, I just don't you're legally just not allowed to do this. Like you can't rig this. I don't think like it's game show rules. Like this prize money is taken very seriously. It has to be taxed a certain way. Like this isn't Survivor's not out there. Just like they're like doing whatever they want. There's somebody from CBS that is a rep, standards and practices and compliance. Sometimes multiple people. And this can't like, you're not allowed to just lie to the country, lie to the players. Like you can't really do that. Look, if there was like somebody waiting, but you couldn't even weight the coin because they picked the side live too. And I think that might be why also it wasn't this side's good, this side's bad. It's you get to pick which is good is bad, which maybe alleviates some of those rigging concerns. But I do not think this is rigged at all. I think the distance of that coin flip, the fact we didn't have a table, it wasn't under the proper lighting is that. I will say, look, again, I was entertained. I am going to say my honest thoughts, though, and some of them might not be positive. And if you're not cool with that, you can go listen to a different podcast. $2 million, we already saw that. We saw that on 40. We had a $2 million prize pot. To do Survivor 50, like $2 million should have been the starting point. This should have been $2 million to $4 million. I'm sorry. Like, we're not going to uncharted territory with this. I don't know. Did that... And a lot of these shows,
me. I don't really care.
I don't know. We talk about the traders all the time. We don't care about the prize money. We don't care about it. The prize fund, you know, $200,000 split like three ways or two ways sometimes. Like, who really cares? And I don't really care. I care more about the title of Sole Survivor. I don't get the money. So what does it care to me? It just felt like we were returning to somewhere we've already been and celebrating it a little too much. Like, patting ourselves on the back for something we've already achieved. And not that it's the money specifically, but it's that energy of like, yeah, man, we just upped the stakes to $2 million. It's like, yeah, we did that 5-6 years ago. This isn't anything new.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but I also think for all the players, you're sitting there thinking you're playing a game for $1 million. You're going to end up walking out with about 600K, maybe even a little bit less. And now all of a sudden you find out that it's $2 million and now you're playing for like at least 1.2 or something. I think the players should be stoked.
The players should be stoked. It just felt like Mr. Beast and Jeff were trying to tell me as an audience that like, this is, we haven't done this before. We did this not that long ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that okay. So we have this twist. We've already talked about, you know, it is what it is. I think a lot of people are going to say it's rigged, and we both are in agreement that it's not rigged. So let's just put that to bed right now. They're not going to rig it in front of everybody. Also, who in their right mind, if you're Stephanie LaGrosso or you're anybody, Cerise, sitting there, you're going to go, oh, sure. Yeah, no, you can rig it for Devins. Give him an idol and make him save tonight so that we can double the prize money that we might not even get now because of this.
Wait,
so,
did he was only saved tonight. He doesn't also get an idol, does he?
Yeah, he does. He has an idol.
Wait, what? I thought that idol was for tonight, making him safe.
Mm-mm. He is safe tonight with an idol. So Devins is going into final nine.
See, safe tonight with an idol is a little, you could take that. He's safe tonight with an idol that's saving him.
Mm-hmm. He handed him an idol and said, Devins, you're safe tonight.
I missed that. I thought it was like, you're safe tonight. And that's it. That's all you get. Oh,
nope. Jeff even explains it right at the beginning. He says, you'll flip this. The prize money will double. You'll be safe tonight and you get an idol. But if you are wrong, you go home. And there's people in the chat who are saying that they think that it was always going to be Stephanie anyway. It was never actually going to be Rick Devins. And part of me kind of believes that. But this is Devins again playing not to get ninth place, but to win Survivor. And we talk about that all the time on these returning player seasons and stuff. Devins knows that he gets through this episode, he's probably still going to be number one target going into nine. He's going to be number one target going into eight. Now he does this. Stephanie goes. He has an idol. He has more room to wiggle because now Devins is essentially guaranteed a spot in the final eight. Plus, we know that he can win immunity challenges. So, yeah, I just feel like there's a chance there.
No, yeah, I get what you're – I kind of smirked because we always say, yeah, play for the win. Being the guy who flipped the coin to double the prize money, who's letting that guy get to the final three? I think that's my probably concern.
Well, and I agree with you on that, but I also think that Devins, with where he was sitting right now, how's he getting to final three? He's not. There's no way for Rick Devins to get the final three. And if he does get the final three, it's going to be such an impressive run that people are going to be like, oh my God, we're going to give him the money. Nobody wants to sit next to Devins in the first place. Now he's actually going to have like a good thing going. Like you're going to give him moves and stuff. So yeah, I don't think that Devins really has a chance one way or the other, but this is Devins playing not to just survive tonight. This is okay. I can get an idol. I can get some legs in this game. I'm not surprised at all that Devins went for this at all.
No. And I think I think it can be a good move. I mean, he articulated it very well that like, if you think you're on the bottom, you usually have a 1 in 6 shot to save yourself. Now it's 50-50. Plus you get this idol, plus the prize money. Like there's all these other bonuses to it. Plus you're up there with Mr. Beast and like you get to, like, who knows what that's doing for you after the show even airs. So I think it was definitely a wise move by Devins, and it fits Devins' mantra. It fits his character of how he plays Survivor. So even if he wasn't going home, like I'm pretty okay with this choice from Devins. Like I think it makes sense for his Survivor character and him as a player to make a decision like this, like all risk, all reward. Like, yeah, let's roll the dice. Let's do it.
Yeah. And as Chris727, thank for all the content this season. You guys have been killing it. As a wise Riz God once said, Rick Devins doing Rick Devins things. What a character. I mean, yeah, everybody was saying this is a Rick Devins moment. I think what was most amazing about this moment is that when Jeff started explaining it, Devins just sat straight up with the biggest smile on his face. Like, I'm ready to go. And everybody's looking around going, well, do we really want Devins to flip? Because now he could get an idol and all that. And it's like, okay, but the alternative is now you have to flip. Like you have to take the 50-50 shot here.
Who's going to take Devins' turn? But it wasn't because it never felt to me that Devins was like the Mike Holloway of this tribe, where it's, you know, 8 against 1, 9 against 1, we're trying to get you out. You keep pulling things out. You keep surviving. Like Devins had some people working with him, and the other alliance was like fracturing. So there was, you know, there's a real chance that Devins wasn't the target. Like, I don't think Devins was going home. I wasn't under that impression, especially given the amount of names and the chaos we heard in that fantastic build to Tribal. It didn't feel like this was a pile on vote. And maybe Devins was feeling that way. Like, I'm going to blow stuff up. Because I actually did not really like, and we could see this coming. Devins told Aubrey, I'm going to blow this up. Aubrey's like, I'm going to blow it up right back. Like, I don't think the public, I'm going to call out all your lies, you have this advantage. I don't think that's a good way to play Survivor. I like, everyone's lying. Everyone's tossing out names. Everyone's sharing information about advantages.
Not Joe.
So, not Joe, because that would be crazy to toss out a name or to lie in Survivor. But I like that type of gameplay. It's like, and Rizzo obviously called out Stephanie for saying, I'm not going to toss a name out. But it's almost like if you're calling people out for lying and tossing name out, then you're just, I don't know, you're kind of outing yourself in a way, and then you're defending playing the game, but then you're saying, oh, you're playing the game too hard. Like, I don't know what the goal was from Devins Foley, and I think it kind of makes you a very tough ally to work with moving forward. And I get that he's like, if I'm going home tonight, I'm going out in a blaze of fire. I just didn't feel like he was in that position where he needed to resort to, like, the nuclear, like, I'm just going to tear this whole thing down. Like, that wasn't – I don't think we got to that point. It wasn't necessary.
Rick Devins is my winner pick for this season, but I don't think Rick Devins actually has a good read on the players he's playing with. And I don't think he's had a good read on them most of the season. And I think that showed 2 weeks ago when he went for the idol, when I don't think he needed to go for the idol. I think that showed last week when I don't think he thought Christian was going home. And I think that showed again tonight when he did come in really hot and threw Stephanie under the bus, which everything he said was true. Maybe it wasn't Stephanie who necessarily brought everything up, but Stephanie's the person he's going for. Really, it was Jonathan who put the thought in Stephanie's mind about Ozzy. And this was actually a good move from Jonathan, which is going to be overshadowed tonight. But I do feel like Devins has had a bad read on everybody around him. And I do think that he's playing a little bit paranoid. And I think one thing that people forget is a lot of these players who are playing, when you play for your second time, the only thing you have to go off of is what you did your first time and who you played with your first time. Devins was lied to the entire time. Like, Devins's back was against the wall the whole season. He thought he was going to make it through Lesu. Ultimately, Wardog sides against him. Then he gets into the post-merge. He earns his way back. And the whole season, his back is against the wall. He could not trust anybody. And I think that's why Devin's reads are off. Because Devins doesn't know what it's like to actually trust somebody in the game of Survivor, with the exception of David Wright. And even then, it was like, okay, but what could David Wright do? He had no ammo. So I think Devins is coming out and playing super, super aggressively every chance he gets, because he doesn't trust what anyone is telling him because of his past game. And I think it has led to him making bad reads throughout. I don't think he was going home tonight, but I will say, even if he wasn't going home tonight, he's a hell of a lot safer going into next week than he was if he just survived tonight without doing this coin flip.
Yeah, no, I mean, the coin flip move was his best move. I really was not a fan of exposing everyone's dirty laundry at Tribal Council. Just like, I don't know if we've ever seen that work for that person. Like, I don't know if that person ever ends up winning the game. I think especially the jury is going like, okay, you're just now, like, it's like flipping the board game up. It's like, oh, I'm going to show everyone's cards to everybody. Like, I lost the board game, and now I'm not going to let anybody play. Like, it has a little bit of that energy to it. And then even before Tribal Council, going way back to the start of the episode, I don't mean to totally jump here, but while we're on Rick Devins, I really did not like the, all right, story time with Rick Devins. I'm going to come clean and tell you guys everything about my fake idol plan. I mean, not only are you revealing that you have this deceptive ability about you, that you can plan it ahead and that this was well thought out, like, who wants to sit next to the end, final Tribal Council, and go up against Devins telling them about the fake idol that he hid at Tribal with Christian, who's now a jury member and who can corroborate everything? Like, I don't want to sit next to Devins at the end. And then that's one reason it was a bad move. The other reason it was such a bad move, why do people have to, like, answer about when they don't play their idol? I talked about this with Aubrey a couple episodes ago. If you get back to camp and you have your idol and you didn't play it, and someone asks you, why didn't you play it? You look them dead in the eye and says, why? You just say, why would I play it? I didn't have the most votes against me. That's what you say. And Devin's could have done it here tonight. Why would I play my idol? I didn't have the most votes against me. That's all you need to say. And now people maybe still think you have an idol. But he tells everybody, I don't have an idol, it was fake the whole time. Now there's no suspicion. Now there's no worry. And I know he gets one back by the coin flip, but I really did not like that story time telling, just showing all your cards. I did not like that from Devin's.
Yeah, because you are Joe. You are Joe Hunter. How dare you lie on Survivor? How dare you be that crafty? I mean, you are Hunter.
I'm literally saying the opposite. I'm saying Devin should have kept up the lie and not came out and told the truth.
Yeah, but you're having the same reaction to Devin's lie being revealed as Joe did, where it's like, oh my God, he's proven.
No, I'm literally saying the opposite. I'm saying there's no reason for him to tell the truth. He should have kept up the lie. Are you not listening to what I'm saying?
No, but the exact words that you just said, I mean, you could yell at me all you want, but the exact words that you just said a little bit ago, you were saying, yes, what you just said, but then you were also saying exactly what Joe said, which was he's this crafty, this much of a problem. He's showing that he can lie this much.
Like exactly. I'm letting people know.
You're right. Joe.
I'm saying that I was saying that as other people like Joe in the game, you're letting other players know that you are outwardly deceptive. And some people don't want to play Survivor like that. Like a lot of people on this season, including Joe. Like, you're really not understanding my point at all.
I'm understanding your point. I'm just saying that you're Joe. Anyway, yeah, no, I mean, but
it's not really working. I think you really got the point I was making.
Here's my defense of Devin's for this. If he keeps up the illusion that he has an idol, they're just going to keep coming for him. They're going to keep voting for him, and he has no way to protect himself. He's done. They're going to keep voting.
Ozzy has an idol. Rizzo has an idol. Do they keep going for Ozzy and Rizzo?
No, because Ozzy and Rizzo actually have allies. Devin's doesn't. That's the difference. Devin's doesn't have allies right now. So for me, if you are sitting there and you're Devin's and you realize that, okay, we'll put that one up too. If you're Devin's and you're sitting there and you're realizing they're just going to keep voting for you, your name is always going to come up because of this idol. And now they're starting to question if the idol is real or if it's fake.
Good. Let them question.
But if they question it, Devin's is going to constantly be getting heat. By him saying this, I thought his point with the story time was, why would you want to vote for Devin's, who's on the bottom, and I don't have an idol? There's no reason to vote for me. Whereas there's a reason with the idol to try to flush it. If you want to go for Emily, but you think you want to weaken Devin's, you got to put more votes on Devin's than you do on Emily. Devin's just proved last week he wouldn't play an idol because he didn't think he was going home. Now, I do agree with what you're saying about the Aubrey. Why all of a sudden do we always have to, you know, tell people why we didn't play an idol? I agree that Devin's could have lied his way through this, but I think Devin's is pretty much screwed if he doesn't reveal this, because they all would just keep putting their votes on him. Now, they might do it anyway, but by him coming clean, I think it lowers the threat level on
him. I mean, the guy who then like decides to take a 50-50 shot at going home for not getting any votes. Like, I don't know if the first confessional we get after Devin's comes clean is from myself, Joe, who says, Devin's told me that idol is fake. Now we can vote him out. It's literally his first thought. So it's like, again, it could be damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, if you keep up this lie, yeah, you take on votes. I just don't like this mentality. Like, you have to, if you don't play your idol one time, oh, now I need to like come clean and tell you all about it. It's like, no, I have my idol still. I didn't get the most votes. You, like, mind your business. Like, I still got it. I think with dwindling numbers here, I don't know if it's people are so easily like splitting votes and trusting that you're going to be able to do like a 4-4. Like, I think you have to choose another target and go with it. Like, I don't think you can just be like, all right, let's split on Emily and Devin's. Like, okay, yeah, now one person flips over and now we got something cooking. Oh, how many people have lost votes? How many people are getting their votes stolen out of it? Like, I don't think with the few numbers, lost votes, potential advantages, if people think Greg has an idol, it's way more difficult for him to get voted out.
Here's the other thing, though, that I will say, and I think why we can both make very sound arguments on both sides of this. It's kind of like in a sport. Well, we are the specialists, but it's like in a sporting event. If the guy who gets the pass interference at the end of the game gets blamed for the loss, the guy who misses the shot gets blamed for the loss, the guy who makes the mistake at the end gets blamed for the loss. But you're putting yourself in the position to lose a game by the actions you take earlier. Devin's screwed himself 2 weeks ago. Like, Devin's put himself in a position where no matter what his decisions were moving forward, he was going to be in a lot of trouble, because whether they think he has an idol or they don't, it's exactly what you said. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, he's in a bad position because of the actions that he took at Tribal Council when he got up and found that idol. And I don't think there's really anything Devin's could do. And I think that he went a week with bluffing and it didn't work. So then he decided, okay, fine, I'm going to do a week where I tell them the truth and see if that curries any favor, because clearly I'm going to be the next person out anyway. So I do think it kind of is like he screwed himself before, but sure, whenever he goes out, we're going to be able to blame it.
Given the current position he was in, I think it was better to keep up the lie. I almost, when he was coming out clean to everybody, I'm almost like, man, this would be so good if the idol was real. Like, this would be all time. Like, you want to like do the opposite, like come tell him the full truth. That's you want to be lying. You want to be making moves. Again, I think the bad part of this, we're getting really hung up on like the idol reveal of it all. To me, the worst part of this was that you revealed the entire plan and how well thought out this was in this big moment. And again, that's like, just, I do not want to sit next to that story at Tribal Council. Like that, like, forget the existence of the idol in your possession being real or not. Filling everybody in on how good you were at this really like creative move, that could not be good for your game. I think we can at least agree there.
I agree. And Patrick J. Stahl says it here. And he didn't come clean about not finding Aubrey's idol. He's still saying, and then I found the Aubrey idol. And get like, Devin's is, I mean, Devin's is crafty and everybody knows it. And I think that's why Devin's is in trouble no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question. What's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge, they also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold. All right, let's get to some super chats here because we have a lot from earlier on and we got to get through them all. So Jayburn Aquatic, bad episode, boring, cringy, and dumb TV. Mr. B's twist amounted to a coin toss. Rick was annoying. Steph going out is bad. Casuals won't like this. And then we get Shane Michael Cup who says, hold the L, Jayburn. It was a good episode, you grouchy old man.
All right, got some fire going back and forth in the super chats.
There we go. NP, accept me. I've been a harsh critic of this season and New Era in general, but that was 10 out of 10. Let the cast carry the season. No twist evil equals unbelievable endgame. I mean, there was a twist here.
No, I think what NP accept me is saying, no more twists from here on out would be an unbelievable endgame.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we'll see what ends up happening there.
Remember, the fans voted for a lot of twists.
Patrick J. Stahl, going back to the auction, says the milkshake contains potassium benzoate. That's bad. Yeah, she said she was going to poop her brains out. So that was the chaos for Emily. She's sitting there through that tribal needing to take a poop and unfortunately just had to sit there through the longest tribal ever. Worth playing for, who agreed with you. So I don't even know if I should read this one, even though it's $10, which thank you very much. The twist is bad because if someone is obviously going out, this just gives them a free chance at immunity plus an idol. And if no one is obviously going out, then someone has chosen to go by rocks. I think that's a fair point, Will. Before I get to the last super chat here, what do you think about that? Like, is that the flaw with this twist?
To me, that's not the flaw with it, except that is a good point. I think there are worlds where this is interesting because I think Rick here didn't know if he was 100% going home, and maybe he incorrectly thought he was the target when maybe the target had already transitioned off of him. And I think that is maybe a little bit interesting on, like, you have to know where you sit amongst the tribe. And if your read is incorrect, you have a 50-50 chance of going home when you were never getting the votes. I think that can be interesting. My biggest problem with the twist is Survivor is a game where a group of people vote each other out based on strategy, alliance, relationship, camp life, whatever factors. But that is the core of the game. Everyone gets a vote, or at least most of the times they do. Maybe you lose it and it becomes more of a game currency, this vote. But at the end of the day, people go and they write a name down and that person goes home, whoever gets the most votes. That's the part I don't like about the twist. That it's we're removing that, and now we are just going to leave it up to chance. We're not going to leave it up to a game of skill. We're just going to, like, flip something or roll dice. And it just, I think that's the part that I have a problem with.
Well, and going to the point from worth playing for, though, I think it's a very fair one. And I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. It makes so much sense. Will just abandon me. He said, screw Phil. I don't want to listen to him anymore. But worth playing for, I think, brings up a good point, because if you know you're going home, you have nothing to lose with this twist. And no one is ever going to want to steal your moment from you and say, no, I'll go do this instead of you to save everybody else. Because the bad part is you go home. Like, it could all go south for you. So even though everybody knows it's not a good idea for Rick Devins to flip this coin, because if he gets an idol and he's safe tonight, Rick Devins is moving on to the final eight. And Rick Devins is very dangerous with an idol in his pocket. He did win a bunch of immunities on his season. And so I get where this point is coming from, and no one is ever going to try to stop Devins. My question is, could Tiffany just not flip the coin? Because that felt like the easy option here.
What do you mean not flip the coin?
Because she won immunity. She couldn't flip it. She wasn't allowed.
I don't think. No, she's not allowed to flip it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the coin was.
So nobody's ever going to take the moment.
The coin was getting flipped no matter what.
Memphis here says Aubrey, but like Aubrey's not in that bad of a spot. I know her name.
I hear you, and I hear the comment. Like, this twist isn't great if there's an obvious person on the bottom. It's kind of giving somebody a free chance at 50-50 of saving their life. It's not the crazy. Like, we've literally seen an idol with that exact same mechanic. It's not like out of this world. And the fact that it's at final 10 is probably not that bad. You know, if this happens later, that's not as fun. Do you want to know my least favorite part about the entire thing, though?
Oh, man, do I ever.
I haven't even gotten there yet. Again, goes without saying, I love this episode. I had so much fun with it. I'm just kind of like looking at season 50 now in just a different way. I'm kind of looking at it holistically. And the episode, the 2 hour long episode, let me repeat, 2 hour long episode on a season with 24 players in a season with only 13 episodes in only 26 days, we eliminated one person. When Zach Brown's on, what do? We eliminated one person, and that is maybe in, you know, I could say indirectly, but most likely a direct cause for the Blood Moon, which to me is like the worst thing about this season. Like, it's all adding up. It's all coming together. If you're going to do a two-hour episode, if CBS is granting you that extra time, eliminate two people. Like, don't do it with three people at once in splitting into random groups. So it's like, I'm just thinking through just the setup and format of the overall season. It's like, why do we spend 2 hours on this? Like that, like, I feel like we're not being efficient or economical with our time and with the player count. And that was just not thought out. And I think it's having like severe consequences on this season.
And worth playing for brings up another great point. It was spoiled because of how much time was left. So, like, not only were we sitting here going, oh, so it's not going to be a double boot. And I agree with you on that, Will. And I'll talk more about that. But then also, it did feel like it was spoiled because I'm sitting there and I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, it's 8:45.
I literally hid the time bar and hid my clock. I have, if you've ever watched like international shows, like whenever I'd watch The Genius and the new episode would come out. The very nature of The Genius is it ends in a death match, a one-on-one challenge. And when the game's over, the episode ends. And so if you see the little thing moving, you're like, oh, I can tell there's not a comeback, or I can tell this is about to happen. So I've gotten very used to, in situations like these, I don't want to know how much time is left. I want to know what time it is. So I was able to account for that and be like, we'll find out what happens. But yeah, that's a big point. Like, you're always going to ruin this when you're airing it live.
Well, and especially, you know, you have a bunch of people watching a 2 hour episode tonight who might not have realized it was a 2 hour episode. They're a little bit more casual and they're like, oh, wow, it's 9:40. The show's still on. And then the next thing you know, it's 9:45 and he's flipping a coin and now 15 minutes left. But I do appreciate your point there with the double boot, because I thought for sure this week was a double boot. I know that when I was talking with Todd Herzog this past weekend for the Predictions of Power Rankings, we thought it was a double boot because it's a 2 hour episode. This is the last 2 hour episode before the finale. So now we're going to have 2 hour and a half episodes and then the finale. We got to get down. So one of these next two episodes is going to be a double boot. They're not going to just do 1-1 and then get to final seven. I don't think they would do a final seven for the finale, especially with doing a live reunion. You're going to get at least 35 minutes out of the live reunion. So I do think that they missed an opportunity here, but I think again it goes back to they wanted the longer time because they wanted to have Mr. Beast, even though Mr. Beast wasn't even on the screen that much. And as Michael JP says here, Mr. Beast said he was so quiet so he didn't take away from or overshadow the players. Also, Christian getting FOMO during Tribal was amusing, but like CBS wanted to make sure Mr. Beast was on a longer episode of the show because that ultimately is going to be better for ad and all that stuff. I was surprised it wasn't double. I thought for sure when he opened that it was going to be a coin that was going to flip where it was going to say, if you land on heads, it'll be a $2 million prize, but maybe there's a second tribal that night. Like maybe those two things were together.
Oh, a double duo? Super
beware. A double duo. And I thought that we were going to have two tribal councils tonight because I thought it just made sense. And especially with how it was timing out, they were a tribal council with a half hour left.
Again, yeah, I wasn't looking at time, but my theory was it was going to be another double duo. Was we're going to do two people are going home, but everyone gets two votes and the two top vote getters go home. That's what I thought this was.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad it wasn't. because everybody, and technically everybody bought that last item. Everybody bought the love letter. So everybody was at the mercy of the super beware advantage. So I think that would have been very fair if it was like, hey, top two vote getters go home because this is what you guys chose. Like you all decided.
Yeah, no, it's going to be beware. Yeah. Going to one tribal council, going to the booth once, casting two votes, but two people going home, it would still be very beware, but it'd still at least be survivor. Like the person who goes home or the two people who go home got the most votes. And it's not left up to the fate, you know, of a coin flip.
A lot of people right now are talking about how this is kind of similar to Do or Die. What's different about Do or Die is Do or Die punished the person who finished last in the challenge, which was just like, in my opinion, very stupid, especially if you
way
were
better.
Yeah. Lindsay went head to head against Jonathan and she was punished for competing rather than sitting out.
Yeah, although the odds for Do or Die, if you play it correctly, are 66% chance you'll be safe.
Actually, though, they played it wrong both times.
I know, they both played it wrong, and it both worked out in their favor. So, yeah.
Yeah, so screw the Monty Hall problem. Yeah, so I feel like, I don't even know what our point was. I don't even know where we were at, but I do feel like overall, this might be the best episode of the season since the premiere, because I did think the premiere was great. This might be the best episode of the season since the premiere. And yet, like you said, there's so many problems with this because it's still not Survivor. And that's what I've been saying. But that's what I said when I had Tori on yesterday from Survivor Now. We were chatting about the episode and the season overall. And I was asking her, what do you think about? How are you feeling about the show? And it is the point that I've gotten to. And I know when I had Fish back on, he was saying the same thing. It's like Survivor will never be what Survivor was. Am I entertained? Yes. Is this a top 20 season? No, like it's not. It's entertaining, but it doesn't have, it's kind of like you can go watch a really entertaining movie and be like, that was a fun 2 hours, but what's the depth to it? What's the more meaning to it? Like there might not be there. When you find a perfect movie, it's got the depth and it's entertaining and it's got a little bit more to it. Like there's just something that puts it over the top. Survivor's falling into the later stages of Marvel where it's like, hey, big flashing objects, isn't this fun? You walk out of the theater, you had your popcorn, you had your soda, maybe you're feeling good about yourself. You don't really care though. Like you're not comparing that to like the original movies. And I think that that's kind of what Survivor's come to at this point. But I'm okay with it because I'm entertained.
Yeah, and like I've said, I've been entertained with these episodes and some other episodes of season 50, but I would push back on saying like there's no way to return to old school or like at least good Survivor. Like we were comfortably in the mid to late 20s, early 30s, I think in a really good spot. That wasn't that long ago. And it's not like these changes have to be permanent. Like this isn't the toothpaste coming out of the bottle and you can't put it back in. Like you cannot do these kooky twists. You can put fewer advantages in. You can prevent people from losing votes and like dial this in and still get to a very like fun but digestible level of Survivor that we know and love. Like I don't think it's not like this is too far gone here.
And Shane Michael Cup says two tribes for 51 were so back. They did say two tribes of 10 to start the season. That's what Inside Survivor
I did not hear that. I mean, that's a start right there. Just or at least not doing the same formulaic thing every season. Like that could be a start. But I get that Survivor 50 is its own thing. Like I don't expect this twist to ever come back. I don't expect the Jimmy Fallon thing to come back or the Billie Eilish thing or like Zach Brown to get 20 minutes of screen time and 4 confessionals. Like these aren't things that are like, all right, as we head into the, you know, 660s of this show, we are going to now like base everything on what we did in 50. I think these are often like one-off experiments and twists that are coming from like the famous super fans or that the fans voted for. So maybe that's why I'm like a little bit okay with it. But yeah, again, like doesn't really feel like Survivor. And the one boot in 2 hours now have, it's like retro causality. Like this is making the season worse, even though I enjoyed the specific episode.
Well, and I don't know about that because we have to see how they're going to do the next double boot. Like, I don't know if they're going to do full cycles for the next 2 episodes. Plus, if they do, we've seen them do 45-minute cycles for stuff. And maybe there is a really predictable boot coming. Like, maybe there is one that's just a snooze and we can get through it. I mean, to me, it feels like Emily should be toast to start next week. Granted, I thought Devin's and Emily were going to go this week. But I feel like with Devin's having an idol now, Emily should be toast next week. And if she's not, that means it's probably either Jonathan or Joe. Who knows? But maybe I'm totally misreading that. But I do feel like there's like one more boring boot in here. And I do feel like they're probably thinking through as they're doing this, what is going to make the best TV? And I think that getting the full 2 hours like they did tonight on what they had was better than rushing and doing the next night's tribal council at the end of it all. I think that this just worked better, or doing last week's tribal council at the beginning of this one, because you could have easily done Christian going home and the Mr. Beast thing in the same episode if it was 2 hours. Like, you easily could have fit that in.
Yeah, but then you're putting Jimmy Fallon and Mr. Beast in the same episode, and I think they want to probably isolate their celebrities. I don't think that ever works. But if you're, I'm looking at like the broader picture here, like the Zach Brown episode is a single boot. When that, especially, we had not done a double boot yet, and that felt like the prime time. What was that, episode 3 or episode 4? Mm-hmm. That felt like, man, we got to start doing double boots, or else we're going to run into something really bad. Blood Moon. The Jimmy Fallon thing, we only get one, as you mentioned. And then here we have 2 hours dedicated to the Mr. Beast episode and only get one. So it's like, again, I'm probably more okay with the celebrity appearances and their influence and the notes. Like, I think that's all fun. I think it's good for the show. Mr. Beast is one of the most famous people in the world. For him to come on to a show we love, like, I'm all for this. I don't think he ate up too much screen time. He didn't get any confessionals. I'm so good with like the level of the way the celebrities were integrated into the season, other than them probably influencing like our numbers and boot counts and how like the overall format was structured, and how that very much so led to a let's split into three groups of five and eliminate three people, which for me is still going to be like this kind of scarlet letter, or this like, this, I don't know, this asterisk on the season where it's like, I can't even look at Aubrey without seeing Genevieve's jacket and go like, oh God, that's how Genevieve got voted. Like, it was just like, Aubrey, like, you didn't really earn that. And it like, that still is going to sit with me, and that's still not going to feel good. And I will always think of that for season 50. Like, I'm sorry.
Now, let me ask you this, because people are talking about it in the chat and we might as well cover it now before we get into other things from this episode. But I know you're higher on All Stars than I am. So let's, you know, we could throw All Stars in the mix or whatever. And there's still a long way to go on this season. But when you talk about the all returning player seasons, the All Stars, the heroes versus villains, the second chance, the game changers, winners at war, and now this one, where would, like, right now, I know there's still some time left, but like, how high can this one go for you, and how low can this one go for you?
It's tough because Game Changers and Winners at War, I've only seen one time. Like, I don't have a great read on those. Actually, I was with somebody the other night and they were like, unequivocally, and I didn't put this in there, like, All Stars is my favorite season of the show. Like, they said that with a straight face. So I would put,
you stopped talking to that person immediately.
Well, I put Heroes versus Villains at number one. I would probably have All Stars at two, Second Chance at three. And then, like, but I think probably Winners at War after Second Chance, then Game Changers. Where does 50 fall into that? Probably above Game Changers, but I don't know.
See, for me, I feel like this can't catch Heroes, Villains, and Second Chance, but it can easily be the third best returning player season. But I think that speaks more to how full returning player seasons often disappoint more than they reward. Like, I do feel that, like, Winners at War is not a very good season. I do not really like Winners at War that much at all. Game Changers, 90% of that season is flat out bad. All Stars, not a fan of. This season,
All Stars is like pretty iconic season.
It doesn't matter. Like, I don't care. It's still bad. Like, I just hate All Stars. So for me, like, 50 could end up at number three. It can't catch the top two. But it doesn't mean it's because it's like, again, it's not a top 20 season. It just speaks more to, a lot of times on these returning player seasons, they don't hit. A Heroes versus Villains working out the way it did is such a rarity. It's crazy. And you can talk about the hype and all that. I know it was cool with Winners at War to see all of the winners come back and play together. Like, that was really great. That is some of the most passive, boring gameplay you will ever see in the second half of that game. Everybody played scared. Except for my queen, Michelle, who was doing everything that she could and nobody would listen to her. So I don't know. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because people were talking about it over there in the chat. A Valencia God 25, if you're a true fan of Survivor, you know All Stars is terrible. Yes, of
I think if you're a true fan of Survivor, you can appreciate a lot of different versions of the show and appreciate that fans probably have different opinions and tastes for the show.
No. So you can't. That's why I do this podcast and I just block anybody who disagrees with me, or at least that's what people say. I block anybody who gets nasty with us. Like, get away. All right. Anyway.
You know what we haven't talked about at all?
I'm just going to sit in silence until you tell me. That's a long, awkward pause for everybody on Spotify.
Stephanie went home.
I was just going to ask you, do you think it was the right move to send Stephanie home?
From what we saw, no. Stephanie got blamed for basically Jonathan's move. And look, I said Jonathan was my front runner last week. I think I have him even higher now, especially when the preview goes out of its way to give a player credit for a move that they necessarily don't deserve full credit for. Essentially, we've been doing our season rewatches of Every Season Matters over on Patreon. And it's like, those come up and you're like, wow, yeah, clearly they just give this move to this person because they win. Like, we're seeing that a lot in the previously on, that Jonathan is being given every, like, all the credit from the producers. So that might be something worth reading into. So like, if you are like aware of, I don't know, I mean, they can't be aware of the edit, but like, if you're aware that Jonathan is playing harder than he's letting on, then I think you probably want to take Jonathan out if you're targeting that side of this tribe. But Stephanie just took the brunt of it. I mean, and I think a lot of this could have been Devin's doing at Tribal Council, but more so like even Stephanie going up to Sari and them having a back and forth. And it was so clear that Stephanie was just lying, and then the vote gets pushed on her. Like, I think once Sari kind of just clocked Stephanie being a little shady and clearly, you know, not making the eye contact, being shifty, Sari's just like, oh, Stephanie, you're gone. And maybe this was just Sari's move, but I don't know. What do you think?
That it lives rent-free in my mind. I forget who put the comment, but somebody put the comment where it said Sari is 100% spoiler every single episode, because whenever she says somebody's going to go home, they do. And it happened again tonight where she said, well, then Stephanie's got to go. And I said, okay, well, Stephanie's gone. And then sure enough, Stephanie ends up going home. And Sari has been right every single time. And for me, I don't necessarily think Stephanie was the right move. Honestly, I think Jonathan was probably a better move here. Joe, I don't think would have made sense, because I think a lot of people want to go to the end with Joe.
100%.
But Stephanie, I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, what is so threatening about Stephanie? She's not great at the game. Strategically, she even said tonight, I'm not throwing anybody's name out. I'm too smart for that. I'm not dumb. That was what worked back in Palau. That was what worked back in Guatemala. That's what worked back in Heroes versus Villains. Nowadays, you have to play a little bit more aggressive of a game. And we talk about all the time, the game actually rewards, though, who play passive. But generally, the winners do have an aggressive move or two where they say, no, I don't want this to happen. We need to make that happen. Stephanie didn't feel like she had any winner potential at all. And all of a sudden, her name has been thrown under the bus, and it's time to vote her out. Now, St. Clifo says Ozzy was the right move. I agree. I think getting rid of Ozzy or getting rid of Rizzo would have absolutely been the right move tonight. But if the other alliance is the one that's actually in control, I feel like Jonathan makes a lot more sense than voting out Stephanie, unless something happened that we didn't see. But I don't feel like there was any real like love for Stephanie on the season to be like, oh man, we got to get her out now. And also, Stephanie's so predictable. Like Sari said, she can tell every time Stephanie is lying. She can read her so easily. I don't know. And we have James Barber saying Tyson is interviewing Ian from Palau on the Pod Has Spoken recap. Does Tyson have spoilers? Right.
I'm going to go listen to that one, Phil. I'm out of here.
Yeah. How does Tyson keep getting the people who played with the people who get voted out every week? I would have loved
that. Yeah, he gets a screener and then probably books the guest. It's probably how
right
it works.
After? Damn.
No, a screener, you get it in advance.
No, I know that, but I'm saying, like, did he already have Ian on the phone being like, hey, whenever Stephanie goes, you're there that night? Like, I feel like that's tough.
No, I think he gets the screener, like, probably 4 or 5 days in advance.
I don't know if they get him out that early.
Well, I don't know. It's Tyson, man. Stephanie is right. It depends who's, like, I think it's more a question for Sari. Like, everyone keeps mentioning Ozzy's name. He's got this idol. If you're Sari, you kind of have Ozzy in your pocket, and you know he's got this idol. You know you have an advantage. And I think Sari is probably thinking, I can just
ride this thing out with Ozzy. He's always going to be a bigger threat than me as of now because of the idol. He's way better at challenges. Or can I just like keep up? Like, why does Ozzy ever need to get voted out? Why, well, what's preventing me from sitting at the end with Ozzy and beating him for $2 million? I think that's probably her thought process.
And I think right now, if you are Ceri, you absolutely need shields, and there's not many left. And Ozzy is the biggest one. I think that's why she's been so protective of Ozzy the entire game, because Ozzy is a guaranteed person whose name coming up, and she wants to keep that person. I think it's also why Devins hasn't actually been in danger over the last couple of weeks. Despite thinking he has been in danger, I think Ceri wants to keep Devins around. Because Devins is somebody you can always go to. If Ceri can get to the final six with Devins and Ozzy both still in the game, Ceri has a path to final three finally. Because you can sit there and say, well, we can't let Ceri get to the end. But then it's also like, well, we can't really let Devins get to the end because of the game that he would have had to play to get there. You can't let Ozzy get to the end because Ozzy's also an icon. So I do think, I think you're right about that. I think Ceri is saying to herself, no way, I got to keep Ozzy in this as long as I possibly can. If Ozzy goes out at five, if Ozzy goes out at four, Ceri is probably the only person who with 100% certainty knows that she can beat Ozzy if she sits at final three with him. So why get rid of him? Everybody else is going to be scared of him. And if you get down to final four, hey, that's that.
Yeah, and I said this last week with Christian and why Christian made so much sense. There are quite a few people left that, whether right or wrong, like you're sitting there on that beach thinking, I can beat that person. Mm-hmm. Like, and Stephanie, I kind of included in there. Like, okay, like we can go through them again. Because at this point, that's where we're headed. Like, we have to at least break this down. But Joe, you look at, you're probably beating. Jonathan, they don't know that Jonathan has completely changed the way he's playing the game and can reveal that. So if you're there and you're not getting these confessionals, you think you can beat Jonathan. You probably think you can beat Rizzo just because he's an unknown. He's a younger kid on an older cast. Like, we've talked about this. Like, you're feeling pretty good sitting next to Rizzo. And also, what has Rizzo done lately? Like, not a lot. Aubrey has been kind of floundering in the middle, doesn't have a lot of alliances. What moves has she pulled? Okay, what are we up to? Four people now? Joe, Jonathan, Rizzo, Aubrey. Emily is someone else who's been kind of called a sloppy player. She's kind of fallen to the bottom. You're feeling pretty good about Emily. So, like, that's
Tiffany. You're going to beat Tiffany.
And then, that's five people out of the 10 that you're like, I'm very down to sit next to these people. And so I think maybe Stephanie is just like, not a good move, because you can take out people that you're not comfortable sitting next to. That's who you should be targeting. Like, why aren't people looking at Ceri? Like is Ceri's name just not going to ever come up? Like, who is sitting there right now being like, oh yeah, final three against Ceri. I got this. I'm getting that, like, for sure. I'm totally winning over that jury. No yeah. way. You know, like that. No, who's thinking that? Devin, somebody who, yeah, is on the bottom, but if he gets to the end, how did he get there? And he, you know, is a public speaker for a living. So he's someone that's a threat. Ozzy with an idol, survivor icon, legend. You should be afraid. Like, I think that's the way you should more be leaning at a final 10 vote. And I think Aubrey was kind of saying that, like, don't just, I don't know.
And they took an easy route and they got rid of somebody that I don't think had a lot of winning potential. And now you're down to final. And the thing is, if those threats ever teamed up and realized, hey, we're the biggest threats left in the game, let's make this happen. And Devins isn't really as aligned. Like, Ceri and Ozzy for sure, but Devins isn't really in there. If Devins ever found a way to get in there and you had those people, and like then Aubrey gets into that mix, because I'm going to be honest, after tonight's episode, I think Aubrey's going to win based on what I saw, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But I feel like with Rick Devins right here, if he gets in with Ceri and with Ozzy and Aubrey, Ceri is an extra vote. All of a sudden, you're at final nine and you actually might have the numbers, especially if Rizzo's still voting with you, and you can take out the lesser threats and you can have a very worthy final four. Not that any of these players are really unworthy. Like, I understand that, like, these are returning players. A lot of these players are studs, but like, you could have one of the best final fours in the history of the show. Imagine an Aubrey, Ozzy, Ceri, and Devins final four. They could make that happen. And if they all realized, hey, we're equally big threats, Cerie's the biggest one. But if you're Devins and Aubrey, you think you can beat Ozzie. And Ozzie thinks he can beat them. So then he's just get rid of Cerie at four. Okay, we'll get rid of Cerie at four. So I don't know. I don't know.
You know who I didn't mention and someone that is probably, you're probably okay with sitting next to?
Who's that?
Tiffany. Tiffany.
I said just Tiffany and then you said Steph. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you okay? That's why I thought you had said Steph. Like, she totally slipped my mind, even though she won immunity tonight. But almost her winning immunity made her, you know, not one of the names tossed out over and over.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's. I mean, all right. Heading into next week, are you putting Aubrey number one for winner chance?
Yes. Yes, because tonight's episode, Aubrey didn't have an influence over the vote at all. And we got a montage of her losing to Michelle and why she lost to Michelle and why she felt 10 years ago she played this game that she should have won, but she understands now why Michelle won and she's going to try to take something from this. And I've been saying this all season. She's gotten this bizarre edit coming into tonight's episode, and I haven't seen the confessional count yet, so if anybody has it, please send it my way. Send me a link. Because I haven't looked at the confessional count yet, but coming into this episode, one of the props I did was who will have fewer than six confessionals tonight. There were two people who had been in the entire season who had not yet had six or more confessionals in an episode. One was Joe, the other was Aubrey. But Aubrey had had a confessional in every episode. And I started to say, with how bizarre her edit was, she was getting this weird Gabler Michelle type edit where she wasn't really doing that much, but she was constantly getting screen time. And then I said, well, wouldn't it be ironic if the season that Aubrey wins, she gets the Michelle edit. And then all of a sudden tonight, they literally explain Michelle's game. And it's Aubrey explaining why Michelle won and how she understands that you don't have to make moves until late in the game and you can still win. It was so over the top. Gardy says it here. It was heavy handed. It was shoved down our throats. And it was in an episode where she had no influence at all over who was going to be voted out. It did not matter to me with how weird her edit has been, a confessional in every episode, hasn't felt like she's actually had that much of an impact on the gameplay. And yet she's getting screen time. She's not Coach. She's not Colby. She's not like one of these Cerie or Ozzie or Christian or Devins, one of these massive, got to give them as much screen time as possible, cue all the way back in episode three going home. She's not one of those types of players, and yet we're hearing from her all the time. I'm fully on board at this point that I think Aubrey is going to end up pulling this out.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I think we've looked at the confessionals every time we do a recap because, Phil, I know you like them and you've had your theory, and it's Aubrey. We keep hearing from her when we do not need to hear from her, where she's just not important. Now, I think you could argue the macaroni and cheese thing at the auction, like that hit pretty hard. Jeff loves that stuff. He will always eat it up. That's going to find its way into a 2-hour episode, regardless of her placement in the show. But the Michelle montage does not really fit. Who is she like sitting next to though? Because it's like, what, like right now, game ends at final nine, and I'm fully aware that's not how Survivor works. They each have to present a case. What is Aubrey's case? Like, what is her story of survival and dictating this game, having an impact on this game? And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm fully kind of convinced me there. And I was saying she's probably my number two after Jonathan. You may have just changed my mind, but like, can she point to anything at this point? Like, what is she pointing to?
So first of all, I want to address this, right? If Aubrey ends up winning, it always bothers me when you start doing this, because now people in the comments are like, this person spoiled, this person spoiled, this person spoiled, this person spoiled. Like, don't say anything. Like I'm not, this is just conjecture. This is assumption based on the edit. And like what you're saying, Will, is exactly why I feel like this whole time I've been holding off on saying Aubrey can even win this season, because it does feel like, to be confident that Aubrey could win this season, if you're watching this casually, it would be like, well, you must have read something, because how the hell does Aubrey win this season? Exactly what you just said. But it's the edit, and that's what we break down nonstop. And as I sit here and I watch this, I don't know what her story is. What's her story going to be? I'm a psycho. I do this. But I think what the story is Michelle's story, which they didn't know how to tell. And so,
but even the Michelle, like that's weird to me. That's not even, I don't know, like Michelle and Aubrey are different people who play different games. And even tonight, you keep saying they explained it. They didn't really explain it. She says, I've learned things. I've picked things up from Michelle. Did she go into detail on what those things were specifically? I don't remember hearing anything about.
She said making moves late in the game, which is kind of my way of thinking that, are the editors setting it up as she hasn't made any moves yet, but they're coming.
Yeah. I mean, the thing too with her edit is she started so in the dumps, like, you know, Genevieve was after her. And again, if Aubrey wins this season, the Blood Moon thing gets like 10 times worse. Cause it's like handing the future winner of season 50, the person that had rallied an alliance and had the numbers against them, and serving their head on a platter out of like no skill or achievement of their own doing. And look, that could also be wrong. It could be they wanted to tell us a story of someone so much on the bottom and build up an underdog and do all that. Maybe Aubrey wasn't as in a better position as we thought. Like, that could be untrue, and that was the story they wanted to just, like, make it seem so unlikely that Aubrey gets there. I didn't watch the video, but sometimes on YouTube you see, like, the YouTube shorts, and there's thumbnails, or maybe this was on Instagram. I don't know. It was like one of those short thumbnails, and it was like Jeff Probst says there's no such thing as a winner edit. It's like, Jeff, how do you not know your own show at this point? Like, that one, it's like, come on, man. Like, we know they treat their winners differently. They hide things.
That was actually from earlier. That wasn't recent.
I'm sure it wasn't from this season. That could be from any time in Survivor history. He did look quite younger, I believe. But I mean, they've been obscuring and hiding flaws of their winners since season one, maybe not season one, but like for a while. And for him to just not even know that is like, come on. It's so false.
Well, and at this point, like, maybe I think when he put that out, that was actually before they started doing the, if you had a confessional in every episode. But now that I'm watching it, I'm like, okay, like the people who have a confessional in every episode are still Emily, are still Rizzo. Although he only had one tonight, which I think is crazy. Rizgod just got here. Fan of Mr. Beast twist. Like, there you go. Well, Rizgod, you have to listen to the whole podcast. We need your 46 cents.
We can't just do like a Q&A. We're right in the middle. We've already hit it.
Phil,
we absolutely will do that. I think we're like, we're like very entertained by it, and it was tons of fun, but like probably don't want to see it again.
Aubrey, Emily, Ozzy, and Rizzo have a confessional in every episode. Ozzy to me should still be the favorite, but I find it harder to believe that Ozzy sits at the end than Aubrey sits at the end at this point, because I don't think anybody else thinks that Aubrey's playing a game either. And maybe she's a zero vote finalist, but to add in that montage tonight in an episode where Aubrey still didn't do anything.
Can I play devil's advocate a little bit?
Please do.
I think so often on returning player seasons, they want like such a juicy story, and often why maybe we are more invested in the characters is like we've seen them play before and we've seen the mistakes they've made. And so they can like internalize it, learn from it, tell us what they're doing differently. And somehow that just like hits harder in confessionals, that hits harder when people are voted out. Like, it just makes the whole experience more fulfilling, and we understand like the intricacies and nuances of a way a particular individual plays the game. And maybe Aubrey just giving this example of Michelle is just so emblematic of like a returning player season and the theme and the second chance. And I know this isn't second chances and it's not billed as a second chance season, but like at this point, we don't have any winners left. No one has one. So like we're kind of in that space. And that's the story they're going to tell at the end. One of these non-winners is going to win for the first time. And maybe Aubrey's story is just doing a good job of articulating it. And I think Jonathan's has also been doing that too.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why I would have both of them as the two frontrunners. I mean, Ozzy also. I mean, not only is Ozzy telling us that he's going to play a more strategic game, now we're hearing from Jonathan that Ozzy is being more strategic and kind of maybe he's projecting a little bit. Because that's what Jonathan is doing too. And so that could explain this kind of odd
Aubrey edit that we're getting. Could be.
No, and I agree with that. I would say Ozzy goes above Jonathan for me at this point. But I do think, you know, Jonathan, again, is going to be very overshadowed on this season. In this episode especially is what I mean. I do feel like the Jonathan stuff that we saw tonight of him telling the lie to Stephanie about Ozzy was saying, maybe we get rid of Stephanie. And that blows up this whole episode. And Jonathan says, I lied about that. And now we see this blow up happen. I love it. I mean, I absolutely, absolutely love it because I think Jonathan, that he is playing a good game. But how is Jonathan?
This is something he can take credit for at Final Tribal Council.
But will they take him seriously enough to vote for him? And I'm not saying Coach will vote for him, I think. I think that there are people on the I think Stephanie is a vote for Jonathan, but I don't think there's enough people who will take him confidently.
If Joe's on the jury, seriously enough.
Joe would vote for Jonathan 100%. Yeah. But let me ask you this. Why did Joe and Jonathan not vote for Aubrey tonight? Why did they vote for Stephanie? Honor and integrity, my ass. Why did they vote out Stephanie?
I think they know where the votes are going. And we've seen, we've seen Joe write Coach's name down, probably because he had to, because he's voting out Chrissy. But like, oh, and we never count. St. Cliffo hopped in with Chrissy, also someone who would definitely vote for Jonathan, like a more older school type, you know. And again, depends who he's sitting next to. I'm not going to sit here and be like, yeah, Jonathan's beating Sari. You guys are stupid. Like, come on. You're not seeing it? I'm not arguing that. I think the next previously on Survivor is going to be extremely telling. If we get the clip of Jonathan lying to Stephanie about Ozzy feeling not so great about her, if they include that in previously on, that's tipping me off. Like the previously on is almost just as good of information as the actual episodes.
I watched tonight's episode with Blake, and
I'm sorry.
It was brutal. I mean, I'll tell you what, guys, this is how the kid watches the episodes. Now, mind you, I know if you're listening, you can't see this. The phone is not what the episode is on. The screen is what the episode is on. He's just staring at his phone. I can't wait to talk shit with him tomorrow night. We got Steven from season 49. But what was the point here? Oh, I watched it with Blake. And as soon as the preview happened, I turned to him and I said, they gave Jonathan all of the credit for what happened last week. Jonathan is the one who wanted Christian out. Jonathan's the one who got Christian out. And I'm like, oh, damn. And now I start to wonder, could we end up in a situation, Will, where I don't know. Let's say Tiffany sits at the end. And I mean, Tiffany would get D's vote, but let's say it's a plurality. We haven't seen a plurality. We've seen a tie. We've seen
what has Tiffany done other than win immunity? And I know it's not her fault. We have not seen a lot of Tiffany.
I'm just saying, like, Jonathan versus Aubrey at the end. I mean, maybe that's the showdown. Maybe that's what's happening here. And maybe that's why we're watching these two players who Jonathan with his growth and Aubrey with just getting screen time. It's like, maybe that's what we're watching. Maybe that's what the season is. And maybe we're in a Dom Wendell type situation where the third place person is casting a winning vote. I mean, who knows? That could happen. No,
it could happen.
Could you imagine Aubrey tying Jonathan?
I was saying, maybe one of them is the third placer in making the deciding vote. And that's why we're like, if Aubrey is the, you know, third place finalist that doesn't get any votes and then is deciding, well, what's our jury size? It's
11. Okay.
It's 11. So we can't go zero.
Have a 5-5-1.
It's like 5-5-1. And Aubrey is like the sole decider of how season 50 ends, then that could explain why we are checking in with her along the way every week. That could also do.
Well, or also, what about this, Will? Tiffany gets a terrible edit early. What if it's Tiffany, Jonathan, Aubrey? Tiffany gets the bad edit. She gets one vote and it's from D because they're friends. And that whole story about Aubrey wanting to play with Tiffany and being good friends with Tiffany leads to Tiffany voting for Aubrey over Jonathan 6-5. Aubrey beats Jonathan by one.
Could happen.
She's the third placer, gets one vote. It's 5-5-1. And then she turns around and she votes. I mean, you know, the thing that I think is interesting about this season is if Ozzy sits at the end, he wins. I really believe, unless he's next to Sari. If Sari, so it would be like a hierarchy, right? You got like a
pyramid. It's the triage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sari wins. Ozzy wins against anybody but Sari. And then I would say third is probably Devin's, because for him to get there too would be incredible. And I think that he has a lot of favor over on the jury. And then after those top three, I think it drops off significantly. And I think the edit for Jonathan, the edit for Aubrey, I think the edit for Rizzo, I think those three edits have been so unique. And the fact that Emily Flippin is still sitting here with a confessional in every episode and she's still in the game at final nine. I don't think Emily can win the season, but Emily could be a losing finalist for sure.
Emily winning would be crazy shocking.
It would be crazy. I agree with you. I think for me, it's more of like those top three. And then after that, it's like, okay, who would win in an Aubrey versus Jonathan? I think Joe is at the bottom. I think Tiffany, because of her edit, is at the bottom. But then it's like you start looking at the other five people who are left in the game, which are Aubrey, Jonathan, Rizzo, Emily, and that's it, because it's just four people left in the game. So you have the three at the top, the two at the bottom, and then those four. Those four, if that's a combination of people sitting next to each other, it's a toss-up based on edit, based on how they're actually playing the game, based on legacy. Like, any of those people I do think could beat each other. I know Rizzo, for a lot of people, has fallen off because he's too new. He's young. People don't really trust, like, that they don't want to make him the representative of the season. But he could steal votes from somebody who might have played a better game than him. And now all of a sudden you're looking at it going, wow, Rizzo just is the reason why somebody lost. But those four, Emily, Rizzo, Aubrey, Jonathan, why can't they all beat each other? Like, I don't feel like one of them stands out above the others. And if Aubrey didn't have a confessional in every episode and was missing one like Jonathan was, I'd be sitting there saying, yeah, I could easily see her losing to Jonathan.
Yeah. And I'm like, I know a tie is pretty unlikely, but a tie here would explain a lot of how there hasn't really been a front runner. There hasn't really been, like, mm-hmm. Christian, I feel like, was our main character, and he left us last week. Saree is doing great. She's playing amazingly, but it's not like Saree has been front and center, driving the narrative, driving the story. It's like, wow, she's getting heavy-handed winners. Like, no one's really felt right, and maybe a tie is something that is actually weirdly plausible here. Like, it kind of would add up. It would, like, kind of go like, huh, that explains a lot.
Because if you start doing jury roulette, and we're way too far out, or as Stephanie calls it, I'm glad she still calls it jury roulette. If you're still calling it jury, if you're still doing jury roulette, which we're still far away, Blake's going to be doing a gross boy later.
Get the gross boys going.
He did a sad gross boy as he walked out of my apartment. But when you sit here and you watch this and you start to piece it together, like, there's votes for a lot of people. The only people I don't see votes, I don't see any votes for Joe, but I see votes for everybody else on the season if they get to the end, at least one.
I want to address this comment from Giardy Y9's. At least Emily isn't bragging about moves which aren't hers. I assume that's in reference to Jonathan. Jonathan, sure, he's mentioned it, but the show is the producers are doing it for him, and that's the difference. And we don't know. Emily could be bragging about moves that aren't hers, and the producers aren't showing us that. But, like, the previously on is going out of its way to credit Jonathan for, and I'm not saying he deserves the credit. I'm just saying we're being told that he does. And that's something to keep your eye on. Should we get to the Philly and the Willie?
Yeah, let's get to the Philly and the Willie, because we got to record Rock Draw after this to get this out for all the patrons. Patrons, if you're listening, you're like, where the hell's Rock Draw? I'm recording right after this to put it out. I'm on the West Coast now, so I still have 3.5 hours. Will's now in Central Time. Mm-hmm. But so in terms of the Philly this week, I think I have to go with Sari, and I feel like I gave it to her last week and I think I'm giving it to her again. It should, you know what? Screw that. I'm giving it to Devin's, because Devin's got up and did what he had to do.
Yeah.
I have to give it to Devin's. I have to, because Sari might've played a more subtle game, but Devin's is walking out of this episode. He had immunity tonight because he went up there. He has an idol. And he doubled the prize money. Rick Devins did exactly what Rick Devins wanted to do. And I think Rick Devins absolutely deserves the Philly. I just forgot. We've been talking for an hour and a half. I forgot how epic it was.
Yeah. No, I mean, Devins has to get the Philly.
Has to. And Sari did get a blanket at the reunion.
But for the first time ever in Survivor Specialist history, the Philly and the Willie are going to go to the same player. At least I think it's the first time in Survivor Specialist history that this has happened. And I'm with you that he deserves the Philly, but I also think he deserves the Willie. And I laid out my arguments before, but I think it's maybe two or threefold. One, telling everyone that your idol is really fake, I don't know how much that buys you. I think keeping that a mystery, or at least having people be like, it could be fake, it could be real, and not like, no one's sure it's real anyway. I think just having that mystique around you is better than being like, I have nothing, you can vote me out for free. So that's one reason. Going into detail and explaining how the whole fake idol worked and that you planted it at a tribal council before, like, you didn't need to give that much detail. It's one thing to be like, hey guys, it was fake. Do that, end of story. It's fake, I'm on the bottom, I have nothing, I'm a free agent, I can help you guys make a move. I get all that, that might have some merit. There's no merit to like going into how much detail and planning this took, because no one wants to take that to the end. And then three, like, I love the theatrics of it. I love that he had the gall to go up there and flip this coin. And I don't know if he was going home, but from what I was watching, there was enough chaos and enough votes probably going Steph's way where Devin's doesn't need to risk his entire game on a coin flip. So I think it makes sense to applaud him for his risk-taking here, and it's a very Devin's things to do. Again, it fits his character. It fits the way he plays Survivor. But if that did, if we hear in Exit Press that that was just, like, that did not need to be done, and I understand he got the idol out of it, like, could have been a, yeah, could have been a game-ending. I mean, 50-50 chance you just go home. And again, respect the move, but I'm more looking at the other stuff. I'm more.
And I don't mind you hedging this, because the last time I gave him the Philly, it was because he did the idol thing, and then it turned out that he did not need to do that at all. So he should have been the Willie and ended up putting a huge target on his back. So yeah, I mean, I'm fine with you hedging this and doing that, and I think that that's totally fair. Good job.
And it makes sense for this episode, because a lot happened, and you can do good and bad things. I think he probably had one of the most epic decisions and moves in Survivor history tonight. I mean, you can like the twist or hate it, but like, that was still epic and monumentous and very cool that he doubled the prize money, got an idol, stayed in the game. Like, cool. But you could also kind of think the way he made some decisions early in the episode were pretty bad. And that's how I feel.
Yeah.
So there are Rick's getting a Philly and a Willie.
There you go. For the prop bet game, last person to vote at tribal was Sari. Immunity was Tiffany. Who said Mr. Beast? Aubrey, Sari, Jonathan, Devins, Rizzo, and Tiffany. Six or fewer confessionals was almost everybody. Emily, Aubrey, Joe, Jonathan, Ozzy, Rizzo, Stephanie, and Tiffany. So only Rick and Sari did not. And there goes Aubrey keeping up her streak, despite the fact that, like, just getting content. Who will bid the most money at the auction? Aubrey and Sari are the only ones that we saw spend $500. I added it up. There were other people who bought things, but we didn't hear how much it was for. Those are the only two I know for sure spent $500. So those are the answers. Final item at the auction, everybody bought it. Mr. Beast didn't address anybody by name. Most confessionals was Devin's. Mouth blurred was Devin's. Episode title was Aubrey. Tomorrow night, Blake and I will be live at 7:30 Eastern time with Steven from season 49 for Digging Deeper. And we will be diving into everything from this episode, Mr. Beast's appearance, everything else, how Steven feels Rizzo's playing, all of that fun stuff. So keeping the 49 train alive. We got Jawan coming up soon too. Awesome. Yeah, 49 is representing now.
I would love a Rizzo win. Imagine that.
That would be crazy. I just don't see it happening. We got Jordan here with a late super chat. I'm so happy that this did not find a way to screw over Sari. Was worried about that. Yeah, there was a part of me that was like, oh my God, is this really how Sari is about to go out? Anyway, like this video and subscribe to the channel. Become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. We're doing second chance right now for Every Season Matters, and we'll be getting into Ko Rong, fittingly, since we just watched Michelle win, in case you all forgot, right after this. So, yeah, and I will not be doing episode title next week because Devin says the tribe is shooketh or something, and that is the episode title, so that will not be one of the props next week. I'll see you tomorrow night, everybody. And then on Sunday, I have Saul at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So Saul tomorrow night, Steven.
Saul, that would be a great one. Maybe I'll try to hop in for that.
Yeah, Will's, and it's Kentucky Derby Day, Will. Don't you have something to do that day? Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Like the video, subscribe to the channel. Really appreciate all your support. We only got 3 episodes left. We're almost done. Season's almost over. Thank you all for being here, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.